to see that transition. It is so fun to watch, to see the transition, even over 3 or 4 days, of someone bringing a young dog that hasn't had a lot of wild bird experience and putting them on good numbers of birds every day for 3 or 4 consecutive days, 5. You see that transition, and they really go from a pet to a hunting dog in a week. I mean, it's really fun to watch.
Hey everyone, Nick Larson here, host of the Birdshot Podcast, the show that brings you conversations, stories, and traditions from all across the uplands. The Birdshot Podcast is presented by Onyx Hunt and supported by folks just like you via our Patreon community. If you want to stay up to date and not miss any of our upcoming episodes, be sure to subscribe and follow the show in your podcast player or on YouTube, wherever you're listening or watching today. Tap that button for me. Thank you for doing so. And with that said, let's get into today's conversation on the Birdshot Podcast. All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Birdshot Podcast, everyone. Today, I am very excited to be joined by former guest Jason Curtis from, we're going back, I guess we didn't go north of the border with my interview with Keith, but we were talking a lot about it, and that kind of sparked this conversation today. So, Jason, welcome back to the show. How are you doing, buddy? And dang, that's a nice view behind you.
Thanks, Nick. It's great to be back on your show. I love listening to it. It's great information and it's been great. And yeah, we got a great view here. This is random. I call it a camp, but it's turned into a house over the years. So very, very fortunate to be here. And if you see a fish jump behind me, let me know. Maybe I'll go after him after the show.
I love it. That's awesome. You know, so in doing this podcast, I guess I'm going on 10 years this year. And every once in a while, I'll look into, I don't know, I'm reading or researching something like best practices. Like, I started doing the video within the last year, right? And so I don't necessarily have a dedicated video studio. This is kind of my office. And like, to me, this is like my happy place. And the window behind me, it's like, you're not really supposed to do that if you're filming, because it kind of gives inconsistent light and stuff. Now, this is east. So usually when I'm recording, you know, the sun's not beating down on this window, it's moving up across the sky. So it's not really a problem, but all that to say, I kind of enjoy, like, it's a hunting podcast. It's about the outdoors, and the changing of the seasons sort of takes place behind me there over the window. And sometimes we get deer coming through and stuff, which is fun. We haven't had, I don't think we've had a grouse stop by yet, which would be pretty rare. I haven't seen many back there over the years, but it is possible. So maybe one day. But my point in saying that is, I really appreciate you joining me with an even better view behind you today. We might have to make that a thing on the podcast to see if my guests can get a little creative with views and backdrops, because it is all about the outdoors at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when we first started talking about it, I said, well, geez, it'd be fun to do it from the canoe. I said, oh,
I know.
get it set up. And I said, oh, get out in my big canoe and do it from there, and which is kind of my summer office. You know, most guys do their interviews from an office of some sort, and that's kind of mine for the summer season anyway. And I said, well, you know, Lord knows what could happen in the boat and connections and all that type of thing. So, well, the second best will be from the veranda of the camp. So, we'll do that. At least we'll have the river behind us and get a little taste of where I am, I guess, that type of thing. So that's
good. I love it. I love the setting, the scene. I suppose our chances of a viral moment are less with you safely on the shore, but it could have got real interesting if you were out in the canoe.
Yeah, absolutely. You never know. Yeah. Always something to see when you're on the water, that's for sure.
I mean, exactly. Well, I'm gonna have you talk a little bit about the fishing. Just before we get into dogs, we're gonna talk dogs, but I'm looking down at my feet here and the listeners know that I was gonna get a pup and we now have it. It is it's June 9th today, and we picked her up on May 30th. She's just settling down here on my feet, so she's being a sweet little girl. I'm gonna grab her and give her official intro on the Bird Shot Podcast before she falls sound asleep. But for anybody listening that's curious or doesn't know a lot about the fishing in that part of the world, why don't you set the scene for us and tell people what they could get into if they were interested in doing a fishing trip up that way, Jason?
Yeah, absolutely. The Miramichi River is a big system. It drains a good portion of New Brunswick, and all the tributaries all have decent salmon runs. I mean, it's not like it used to be, but oh my God, look at that. Holy smokes.
She's tired too.
Yeah, good stuff. That is a beautiful dog. Congratulations. So yeah, and so it's right now it's kind of the start of our busy season. The very first runs of the year for our summer season are starting right now in early June. So, you know, guys have been catching fish for the last few days. And it's a little tougher than it used to be. I mean, the salmon numbers have been on the decline. And so it used to be, just a tremendous fishery. And now it's a little tougher. You got to work hard to get one. But again, this is the first of the season, and every year is different. We never know what's gonna come along. Hopefully we get some good weather. The last couple of summers have been really, really dry, and the water conditions have stayed low and warm, and it's made for tough fishing conditions. So this year so far, it's been a lot cooler and rainier throughout May and early June, and river levels staying up good. Temperatures are really good, so. Things are looking good right now. What's going to come for fish, we're not sure, but there's some in the river, and there'll definitely more to come. Our biggest runs of the year are in July for the most part, so it's kind of a bit of a bell curve. It's just starting about now, the run kind of gets a little stronger every day. A few more fish show up till about mid July, and 10th, 12th of July, that type of thing is kind of the max of when the most fish come through, and then it kind of tapers off a bit till the end of July, and then things kind of are quiet in August. That's always a bit of a downtime for us, and then we start to see some new fish again in the fall, and we have a fall run that comes up, and then we have the summer fish that are in the river anyway, so you can fish for those, and then there's some fresh fish coming along, and then so we're hoping for a good year. I mean, it's a big system. There's a lot of tributaries. There's a lot of places to fish, and they're all very different. The upper stretches of the river are very bouldery and fast, moving, rapid water type thing. And then you get into a stretch where it's more gravelly and bars and a little less rocky. And then we're in the lower stretch. We're about 15 miles here from the head of the tide, so we're really at the lower end of the river, and this end is kind of flatter water like you see behind me here, and it stays about this size all the way down to the mouth where the tide water starts, and then it starts to open up there and head to get bigger as you head towards the bay. So it's a big system and lots of little areas to fish throughout it, lots of camps you can go to, and it's a good way to spend some time, that's for sure.
Yeah, if you were going out today, on a beautiful sunny day, I mean, I've seen the water behind you is not moving real fast. Like, what's the method to get out some fish on a day like today?
Yeah, I mean it's faster than it looks. I mean
Okay.
it's not gravel, it's not rocky, so it kind of doesn't show the wakes, but it's moving along pretty good speed. So along this stretch, there's like bars that stick out into the river. There's lots of rocks on the bottom that the fish will lay behind. So you kind of find spots that they normally would stop at. The water will be deep, and then it'll come up into a shallow area where it, and then the water will pick up over that area, and there'll be some lies on top of that. So you fish those bars, and the pools are different than they are in the upper stretches where it's a fast water run that tails out into a little slower water. This is it's different down in this section, but it's equally as fun, and we do a lot of fishing from the boat here. We do a lot of canoe fishing because
Okay.
the river is bigger, and some places are hard to wade. Water's too deep, or to get the right angle on the spot you want to fish. So we do a fair bit of boat fishing here, which is fun. We use like 26-foot canoes, and so which are extremely stable and comfortable. So we fish out of those a lot, and
26 footers. Yeah, okay.
they're a big boat. Like
Yep.
they can literally walk on the gunwales. They can
Wow.
they're super stable. I can stand
Okay.
on the gunwale and rock my weight, and you can't upset it. You can fall out of it easy enough, but you can't really upset them. They're
That's
great.
comforting.
Yeah, if we call them canoe, but they're really they're just because of the
Sure.
look of them. But they're a big boat, and they're powered with a 10 or 15 or 20 horsepower, so we can motor around from pool to pool and drop the anchor, fish where we're going to fish type thing, and move along that way. So it's pretty good comfort, and it's a lot of fun. Fishing out of the boat is a pretty nice way to do it for sure.
Yeah. Got it.
So no, it's
Well,
good.
knowing the listeners of this show are apt to spend some time in the woods, if anybody out there listening is kind of thinking like, you know what, that'd be a pretty awesome bucket list trip, cast and blast.
Yeah.
What should they know about timing, opportunity? What's a good way to maybe approach like a cast and blast trip?
Yeah, well, I mean that's our woodcock season opens here on September 15th, and grouse opens October 1st. So our salmon season closes October 15th. So you have about a month there, but really only if you don't want to eliminate grouse from your hunt. So you have like from October 1st, the grouse season starts, to October 15th when the fishing season closes. If you wanted to do a
Okay.
cast and blast type thing, that would be your prime window for doing it. You could do it in the last 2 weeks of September. Like I say, woodcock season opens
Sure.
September 15th, but you hate to miss an opportunity on a grouse if you saw one just because the
Yeah.
season didn't open. But so anyway, it's good, and it's a fun day. I've done it a lot. I haven't done it much the last few years, in my younger days we did it a lot, and it's fun. It's a little bit of it's a little bit extra work, you know what I mean, because you got all your fishing gear with you, and you're all your hunting gear with you, and so you're canoeing along, and you want to stop and fish a pool. You put your waders on and your stuff, and then the next spot maybe a hunting spot, so the waders are off, put on the upland stuff, and so it's a little more work involved with it, as opposed to just doing a hunting float or a fishing float. But it's a great way to do it, and just it's you got to really pick your spots as well. So sometimes maybe your best hunting spots aren't in the same stretch where your best fishing spots are. So you kind of want to have to play that into your equation as well. What do you want more? Do you want more chance at birds, or you want more chance at fish? And then are birds the bonus, or is fish the bonus? And kind of plan it that way, because they don't always line up for your best hunting spots and your best fishing spots on the same stretch of river that you might float in a particular day. So anyway, but it's fun. It's fun, and I do have a hunting float lined up for this fall, I think, and we're gonna do that That will be a that'll be a good day, and hopefully all is well. You got the right water captain.
That's, I didn't really think about it in that way that you could be floating the river and hunting, number one. Like, I'm just so accustomed to hopping in the truck, but yeah. And then I was thinking more like, I was going to ask you, like, what does the day look like? Do you go out fishing and then come back to the camp and get changed and go hunting? But the actual idea of floating down and doing a little bit of fishing and then pulling off at a spot, place where you can hunt and go. I mean, that sounds even cooler. I mean, like you said, when you try to do two things at once, maybe you're giving up a little bit here or there, but if you're cool with just the idea of doing a floating fishing and hunting day, that sounds like a lot of fun to me.
For sure. And most guys actually now they do it to what you're talking about. We'll hunt the morning when it's generally cooler type thing, come back to the camp and have lunch type thing, and then grab the fishing gear and then fish the evening. And so that's more what we do now, and results are usually better for the day, that type of thing, because you can hit your best covers and your best pools. And most guys, that's what we've been doing lately. Anyone that wants to come and do both. So it's fun for sure. It really is. It's a great way to come up and enjoy both. I mean, so many of the people that come up here, that are, this time of the year, maybe in June, that coming on a fishing trip, they're bird hunters the same. I mean, that community of, salmon and trout fishermen and upland hunters, they're almost the same group, really, the same group of people. I mean, you can go to a Ruffed Grouse Society dinner or Miramichi Salmon Association dinner, and 80% of the people there are the same people. So it's fun. It's a good community.
In that, so kind of like you've got like a month to work with. You've got the 2 weeks in September if you wanted to do fishing and hunting, woodcock only. October 1st, Grouse opens. What are the conditions like the first couple of weeks in October? Is it, 'cause, I mean, so you're 15 miles from open water, I think you said. So I'm imagining it's not like early October for you. It's not like frigid temperatures, frost, freezing cold. Like, I mean, is it still thick foliage? Like, or is it colorful woods? I mean, it's just been so warm the last few years. Like, it feels like the best hunting is later and later into the season. But what's that early October window like in the grouse woods up there?
No, you're not wrong. I mean, it's with the changing temperatures, and we've seen it here as much as anywhere. But by October 1st, the maples have all turned, so all the reds and oranges, they're all turned. The popple haven't turned yet. So when you're hunting that first 2 weeks, the maples are turned and it's starting to fall. We could have frost here, anytime in September. I mean, and do and actually, I mean, on the rare occasion with a full moon and some cold temperatures, you're going to have one at the very end of August. It really
August,
has.
yeah.
But you can get frost all through September, and by October it's frost. By October 1st, every clear morning basically is frost. You've given up on the covering the flowers long ago. By then, it's frost. And so, and usually by the end of the first week of October, the popples are starting to turn, the aspen, and by the 15th of October, they're mostly down. So everything is mostly down by the 15th of October. It happens pretty quick. You go from green with some reds and oranges. For a week later, the orange and red's gone, and you got your yellows, and then another week later, they're gone. So it's a pretty quick transition there through those first 2 weeks of October. But there's generally a fair bit of foliage at the very first of October, and every day kind of gets a little better as you go along. But and September, we do some hunting in September, but not a lot. Like I say, most guys want to kind of wait till grouse season opens before they come, but some guys do.
Yeah.
But it's pretty drained through. By the 15th of October, or sorry, September, it doesn't look much different than what you see me, behind me right now.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's that, or the 15th of September. So,
Yeah.
and can be, can be pretty warm as well. You could get days, that are 80 degrees and mid to late September here. So, it's not, most days are cooler than that, but it's not uncommon to get those. You can get them through October as well. This last few years, we've been getting some pretty hot days well into October.
Yeah.
So, we're definitely seeing a shift that in the climate. We're seeing a shift in the woodcock migration. We've seen a big shift in the woodcock migration over my short time in the field. I've only been guiding for this would be year number 39, but when we first started, it was by the 15th of October, the birds were gone here. I mean, that was really those first 2 weeks of October, and we were, that was the height of the flights. And resident birds were starting to leave. That second week of October was the week to be here. I mean, everyone was crowded in trying to come. And the third week was, it was really hit and miss. But that's not the case anymore. I mean, now, I mean, we're not even starting to see any migrating birds, in early October. It's really, that third week before we start to see some decent numbers, moving down. So it's been a big shift for sure.
Yeah, that I mean that sounds pretty typical of late, like recent history, and that's how I would sort of expect our, season and foliage conditions to kind of play out. Like you said, it can go quick if things start to happen. I think last year was a really odd one here. I don't think we had like a serious frost until almost the last week in October. And that I mean that just the all the ground cover and the weeds and everything just kind of stayed up for the bulk of October, and then finally did come down. The hunting started to get better, but you just never know, and that was kind of strange. But similar, so like those first 2 weeks are not necessarily prime time in the grouse woods, but if you want to be there in October, do a little fishing, do a little grouse hunting, I mean it's that's the sweet spot.
Yeah, for sure. No, that is a sweet spot for both, for sure. And like I say, a lot of guys come to do both, and it's fun. It really is. It's a good time.
Yeah. So it was I did look this morning. I find it funny. I always like to see, I love having people back on the show, especially now, get like I said, we're going on 10 years here. You were on the show
Yes.
8 years ago, and
Enough.
like a scary amount of time. It's actually, I looked, the episode was published June 10th, 2018. So like not
Yes,
just 8
sir.
years ago, but like 8 years ago to the month, basically. And I feel like
Yeah.
that happens an odd amount. So I don't know what
That's
that
funny.
is, but as Keith mentioned, going out with Danny Bird, and I remember talking to Keith, and I was kind of thinking about you, and I think I mentioned it in the show, and I figured it was a small enough circle up that way. But man, you've been at it for 39 years. How did you get into guiding and bird hunting and grouse hunting? I'm almost certain we probably talked about that 8 years ago, but.
Well, it goes way
Yeah.
back really to being a kid here in New Brunswick and chasing grouse around the swamps here as a child
Perfect.
with a slingshot type thing, and it just kind of develops into it kind of develops into a passion. And then I went to work at a salmon lodge just out of high school, and I actually had a short stay at university. It's kind of funny. I went
Too
there,
many
and
walls.
I knew it wasn't for me, and I really knew. And so I was there like, I was there like three weeks. I was there like 3 weeks, and I said, okay, that's this is not for me. So I knew these people that owned the salmon camp, and so I went, and they took me on as a guide, and literally I was in the grouse covers the next week type thing. And so it was, but as a kid growing up, in New Brunswick here, and the magazines were a big deal, like the Outdoor Life or the Field and Stream, and so you're reading these stories, from Jerry Robinson and these guys as a kid, and reading about upland hunting all over the world, and with dogs, and it really, really sparked my interest in doing that. And so when I went to this camp, they had a couple of guys that were running dogs, and had a few clients in, and so I started traveling with those guys and getting those guys to show me the ropes. And because my upland hunting at that time was walking a logging road type thing, looking for a bird. And so those guys, took me under their wing, pardon the pun, and really showed me the ins and outs of how to be an upland guide and what to look for, and all that. So I owe a lot of credit to those guys. And again, the outdoor writers like Jerome, back in the as a kid type thing, and reading stories, and some of them based here in New Brunswick, of upland hunting. And it really, really sparked my curiosity about hunting with dogs. We always had dogs at home as kids, but they were not hunting dogs. They were just family pets. And so I got my first Brittany then, probably around 1988 or 89, I guess, 89 maybe. And the guy started helping me train, and it just kind of blossomed and snowballed, from there type thing. And as the years went on, I fell in love with it and kept doing it. So the upland community is small. That's probably about the same time I met Danny Bird. Actually, he was a good friend of the Salmon Lodge where I worked, and I remember meeting him there as I was just a kid type thing. He was probably 10 years older than me, but I got to know him then, and Danny's just a super guy. I mean, and just wickedly well respected in the salmon and upland community here, and so it was fun to hear him on your show.
Yep.
When we first started talking to Keith, I was thinking, oh, I wonder who this guy is. I wonder if I know him. And then when he went to Danny's, like, okay, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Why he had such a great trip.
Well, you
great
sparked
experience.
Something there. So yes,
Yeah,
I recall now. Obviously, we love talking about books on the show. Jerome Robinson, he wrote a book, and I recall you and I going back and forth about that a little bit way back when. I got a copy of that book. I don't know if I got it. Usually I can remember. I don't know if I got it because you recommended it or if I just got it some other way. Is it Pointing Dogs or something? I don't remember.
Yep. I think it's called
I'm going to look it up here
because
we want to get
training,
that
something like that
for the listeners. Jerome Robinson.
Yeah.
Oops. I do remember I read it maybe before I got Rose on my laptop. There was some interesting stuff in there. Oh, yeah. The Ultimate Guide to Bird Dog Training, Jerome B. Robinson. That's right. He's got another book called Hunt Close, Training the Hunting Retriever. Got a few of them. But yes, The Ultimate Guide to Bird Dog Training. I do have that one. It is available on Amazon, so we'll drop a link to that in the show notes. Now, did you hunted with Jerome, didn't you?
We've fished together a lot. We never hunted together, but it was a really cool experience for me because, like I say, growing up here and reading his stuff as a kid, which inspired me to do what I'm doing, and then all of a sudden I'm sitting in the boat with him, chatting about the same stories that I was reading about as a kid. It was a big deal for me, and we've become friends. I guided him a lot for fishing, and you could spend 8 hours with someone in a canoe, every day for a week. You get to know them pretty well, and you do that a bunch of times, and you're friends. So he's just a super guy, an absolute wealth of knowledge. I mean, when it comes to the uplands and dogs, I mean,
Okay.
he's the gun dog editor of Sport the Field for 25 years and the columnist at Field and Stream. I mean, he was, he's been there and done a type thing for a long
Okay.
time. So he's still doing well. He's getting up there in age
Oh, very cool.
but we had an email from him a week or two ago and kind of checking in so it's yeah, it's fun. Fun stuff. And, being a guide and meeting one of your guys that kind of grew up as a mentor type
Yeah.
thing
Yep.
is yeah,
Well, yeah,
that's a big
and that
deal for
was
me for sure. A lot of
the
fun.
other spark to
A lot
this
of
was
fun.
we were going back and forth a little bit about young dogs, and obviously I've got the puppy and I need to catch up on some of my reading. You know, it's kind of this is my third time around,
Yeah.
as the listeners well know, and a lot of stuff has been after 1 week with the pup. I will say it's gone quite well. The she's adjusting very well, you know, like I have a really nice setup here
Yeah.
for the dogs. They're kind of in the house, and then they're out here in the office. And we've got a fenced in backyard. And I did have to do some puppy proofing around the fencing. That was a given. But we're all good there now. And
Oh yeah,
she's
awesome.
getting along with the
Yeah.
dogs. Her and Rose had some moments. Rose didn't have a ton of patience for the puppy, but I think we're working through that now. And they're getting along
Yeah.
pretty well, but it's been great. I will say she is about like the bitiest teethy puppy that I've had yet, which again of the three, I'm trying to keep all
Yeah.
kinds of stuff for her to chew on and that sort of thing. But she's
Yeah.
more so than I ever recall. She's pretty mouthy. I don't know if you got any tips for that, Jason. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that one, you just have to kind of wait it out for the most part. I mean, I've had a few over the years that have been like that as
Yeah.
well. And it's like, just keep them in chew
Yeah.
toys and, keep the older guys away a little bit. And, it's a short stage, thankfully. It doesn't last long, but yeah, I had one, Lottie, my little one now. She was like that too. And it's just a stage and they get through it, but it's
Yeah.
there's not a heck of a lot you can do at that young age other than just kind of
Yeah.
keep them lots of toys
Yeah, we're
and wait it
trying to
out
keep her exercised
for sure.
and
But
keep
anyway.
the chew toy. That's
But
I'm really loving the puppy
that's right.
walks through the woods. And you know, the first couple of days I sort of took the older dogs for a run and
Yeah.
then took her out separate, and we've had her and we have a really nice area here. I've got a couple of little creeks and streams that are pretty slow moving right now, so I've already had her. She's in the water and not swimming around or anything, but waiting around in the creek. And just,
Perfect.
you know, again, this is something
Yeah,
that I've talked
wait
about a
for
lot. My idea of like puppy exposure 12 years ago with Hartley was like, oh wow, I got to manufacture
that.
all these things and do all this stuff. And maybe my lifestyle has definitely changed now. I have two bird dogs and we have a routine, so it's easier to sort of supplant another pup into that routine. But it's not as complicated as I made it out to be. It's just about kind of bringing the pup along, bring her everywhere you go. And
No,
our
for
boys
sure.
finished up school last week, and we brought her
Yep.
to pick up the kids at school, and she was. My wife and I kind of talked about it. We're like, yeah, I don't know. Like, you know, the last thing you want is a bunch of kids like running over and like scaring the puppy. But my wife just held her, and we were kind of prepared to bring her back up to the car. But we've done a lot of stuff with her in the last week, and she's at every step of the way, she's handled it very well. So like, if I would have seen anything or noticed anything, we could change course. But we've just been bringing her along, and she's adjusting really well, I would say, at this point.
Yeah, I think that's the exact right thing to do. The more exposure to everything, the better off you are down the road. I mean, so it's these first few weeks and months are, they're a lot of there are fun times with a puppy, and but that exposure is key. I mean, in every situation, that's what it's all about
With
is
a
exposure.
nine,
So
10 week old puppy, like where
it's
she's at right now, other than just kind of the basic exposure to like everyday life, is there anything else that you like to start doing, or like anything you do in particular, or not really?
Yeah, no, I start early, and I know there's if you talk to 10 dog guys, you're gonna get 10 different opinions. But for me, I start early. Like I literally start, at that 8, 9 week stage, the day I get home type thing. I still like using the wing. I still do that. I think it helps. I know it's sight pointing, but it just helps support the other commands that you're going to use. And it's a game at that point. They really don't know what's going on. They're chasing the wing around, but the instincts, start to kick in a little bit, even at that young age. If you're flinging the wing around and they're creeping up towards it, and they have that little hesitation, and that little hesitation really is the basis of the point. You know what I mean? And where they want to pounce on it. And of course, I hold them back, and I start my wool training really then. Really from day one when the wing stuff. And again, I know there's a lot of mixed reviews on that, but that's what I do, and I've had pretty good luck with it. And like I say, it's just a game, and I can put a little check card on them,
Oh,
and I
really?
even go a
Yeah, that's
step
not a bad
further. I
idea.
even
Just
put a little
exposure,
bell on them
right?
when I'm doing that. Oh yeah, just for fun. Yeah, it's just for fun, right? And so the first couple times they're laying on their back biting at it, and then all of a sudden they don't mind it, and so it's all part of the game. You're just laying down some little things that they're gonna make a difference with later on in their training. And so I do that, and I mean they love it. I remember as my last little guy, Yordy, he would see me grab the fishing rod, and he'd be jumping 4 feet off the ground and screeching his head off. He wanted to go play, right? And so I do that, and so I start dogs really young. I really did, like I say, from day one. I'm doing stuff like that with the wing, with your pup. At her age, perfect timing for you. Like as far as for this fall, she's going to be probably 6 months old in October type thing. So you're going to be able to, have some fun that first fall. As if instead of she was born later, maybe not so much. But really, 8 weeks I start on the wing. By 12 weeks. I'm starting with some birds on the preserve type thing, some planted birds, and by 16
Yeah.
weeks I'm in the covers with them. I really am. I move along pretty quick, and as well with starting them on the starter pistol, that type of thing. I start that literally from
Yeah.
day one as well. We're lucky we have a pretty big property here, and about a 5 acre little field. So I'll take the puppy out, chasing the other dogs around the field, and I'm firing the starter pistol, while they're running around, and she doesn't even know what's happening because he's so
Yeah.
interested in, catching up to the other dogs type thing that. I start that very early as well, and like I say, then I'll about 12 weeks I'll move to the preserve and start, planting some birds and do that, and then by 16 weeks, I'm by 4 months old, I'm
Yeah.
giving some introduction to wild birds
Yeah, what?
for sure. So yeah, I move pretty quick.
Yeah,
And
you've been doing it long enough where
usually
you know
works.
the
I mean,
signs to pay
I see
attention
good
to, right?
results.
Like you know if a pup's not tolerating something, you have an idea of how to back up, slow down, that kind of thing. So as
That's
long
right.
as they're taking it in stride, there's a lot you can do. And like training is such a broad word, like training an eight week old pup is not the same as even a 12 or a 16 week old pup. So it's knowing the dosage and the attention span and all that kind of stuff. But I almost, I would like, you could call it shaping or molding. Like I'm doing that. Like I'm trying to encourage, you know, simple stuff that you probably people have heard, you read about in a magazine when you're giving the dog the food, like make sure it's not dancing around, hopping all over, jumping up on the side of the, you know, it's calm, it's sitting, or it's got 4 feet on the floor. Just starting to encourage that, that stand still, that, that wall, kind of laying the foundation for whoa. And I was curious, you mentioned, you start your whoa training, right, with the wing. Are you just, you're just kind of looking for that pause and that stop. Is that what I'm gathering?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. That little hesitation. I mean, it's so fun to watch. I mean, you're tossing the wing around and they're running for it wide open and, you know, and you pull it away and throw it over here and they're doing the same. And all of a sudden it kind of clicks in, you know, they stop running for it and they start creeping towards it. You know what I mean? And then, you know, as they're creeping type thing, they'll maybe do a little hesitation. They'll hold the cord and it'll make them stop. And then, you know, and then, and, you know, I start my, you know, my woke command right then. I mean, it's one that takes time to master, that's for sure. But, you know, I start it right then. And, you know, it's fun to watch them, you know, trembling almost because they want to take off and get it. But it, and again, it's what I do and it's worked well for me. So I'm going to continue doing that. And yeah, I do have a wall table as well. So the ramps on it. And I use that and that's great. I mean, it really, really helps things out as well. And I'll use that and it's so much fun to watch them learn. I mean, that's the fun of a puppy, just seeing every day the little tiny things that they do different. And it's all just, like you say, laying the foundation for the bigger training that comes later. And just little things that you can do. And like what you're doing with the food, I mean, that's perfect. I mean, it's all obedience. I mean, and obedience is you know, the biggest part of dog training is the obedience side of it. You know what I mean? That they know their commands and they know their you know, the pointing is instinct, but the rest of it is
If it's your first dog, you know, dog training, at least in my experience, it's not always obvious, but when you start to learn what to look for, you begin to see all these opportunities for training just throughout your daily life. You know, it's going in and out of the door, feeding them, letting them out of the crate. You know, you don't just let them run out, like let them be invited out, that sort of thing. You start to pick up on that stuff a lot easier. Again, this being my third dog, there's lots of things that I'm doing like that where we're getting a lot done in during the day, but it doesn't feel like a lot because it's just during the course of normal life. And one thing is, I mean, their bodies are growing and developing, but their brains work. I mean, it's amazing how fast they can pick up on cues. And if you time the reward appropriately, I mean, she's little Hazel. She's already she's paying attention to me and she's doing things that it doesn't take but a time or two. And obviously she'll grow and she'll challenge and she'll do all that other stuff. But I'm just looking for those opportunities throughout our day to continue to shape and mold. Now I did do the wing on a string with both of my pups for fun. I kind of didn't think about that yet with her, assuming that I would do it, but especially with my boys are having a lot of fun getting involved in the training and they're wanting to help out. So, and they're really into fishing right now. So if I pull out the fishing rod with a grouse fan on it, we're going to have to do that this week.
Absolutely. You know, it's a fun process for sure. But it is a process. I mean, it's you know, some days things go really well and some days they don't. And,
Yeah.
And we just keep at it for short little sessions, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, 2 or 3 times a day, I usually do. And it's all a game, right? It's all about, it's just a game for them at that point, having fun. But again, they're developing little things that are going to help
Yeah.
them down the road for
Yeah, I
sure. You
do
know, they
that.
may
You
not
gave
know
me
it,
a good
but
idea
yeah.
with the bell. I've never really
Yeah,
done
for sure.
that, but knowing some of the things that with Rose, with her bell, like I think I told this story not that long ago. She's got a bell that she always wears, and she never pays any attention to it. But one time I didn't have that bell, or something was her collar was dead or something, and I put a different collar on her with a different bell, and she like shot. She was about to take off into the woods. She took like 2 steps and froze because that sound of that bell was different, right? So, and I'm sure we could have worked through that. We didn't really have the
Yes, sir.
need to,
Wow.
but that reminds me, I've got a kind of a little tinkle bell. I should strap that to the pup's collar this week. And the other thing is, like, I haven't done anything with like loud noises, but the stuff you learn to pay attention to, I've been very much paying attention to the pup's reaction around anything that happens around the house. I mean, I got 2 boys, 8 and 4, so at any moment a ruckus could break out. I mean, vacuum cleaners, like all that kind of stuff. And she hasn't like paid any attention to
Start
any of it.
following
So I
you.
not that she's gun broke or anything, but she's looking like that's not going to be an issue at this point. But we'll officially do that at some point. I'll probably take a trip out to Pine Ridge here this summer and introduce it to some pigeons and that sort of stuff too. So,
Sure.
yeah. What's
Absolutely.
do you have a
Yeah,
do
good
you have
stuff.
a
No.
let's
That's
talk
fun.
briefly if there's anything there about gun intro and bird intro. Do you like to do anything specific as far as that? Like, do you have pigeons at the property, or what do you like to do?
Look, lately, like I said, the salmon camp that I've been
Okay.
working at the last bunch of years, they have a pheasant preserve, and so I get access to that, especially in the summer and early fall months. It's not busy, so I can lucky enough that I can grab a couple of pheasants, and I can either use launchers or just kind of plant them in the field, the old wing over the head type thing. But I do start, I'll bring someone with me type thing
Yeah.
to, fire shots at a distance, just, and then kind of move things closer. But I've never really had an issue. I mean, with the dogs, with guns, and they're so excited about the bird, and that it's like they don't even hear it for the most part. And so, but I do, but I, but I do, you know, start at a distance and move closer, and using the pheasants and do a couple a day type thing over several weeks, and it usually, this transition from there, to the bird covers type thing. And we're lucky here in New Brunswick that, we've got a really good population of, resident woodcock that are here, right now, and that later on in the summer we can
Yeah.
start and, get dogs on woodcock, early, and that just makes such a difference. So I do that transition pretty quickly. I mean, they seem to learn, they learn the pointing from the and holding. But then, the training really kicks in when you get them on the wild birds. Just, that's the difference maker in my books in the bird dog development, is when you make that switch from the planet birds to the wild birds. And so I do that over a few weeks or a month type thing, and
Yep. If you've got access
That's
to
where the
them,
real fun kicks
tough,
in.
tough to beat wild birds, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's exactly. Yeah, you can't beat it. Like I say, we're lucky here to have a good abundance, and I'm super lucky that I have covers literally, 3 minutes down the road. I got a little cover with a family of woodcock in it, and so to be able to take the dog there, and work them on wild birds when you know exactly that there's a bird in this little clump in the corner because he was there yesterday and he was there last week and he's there been there all summer, that you can bring your dog in on the right on the right angle, so it's the right wind, and get in there with him and see how he reacts when they finally grab scent for that first time, and it's a fun process. And I say we're very, very lucky that we have the amount of wild birds that we do. Actually, over my shoulder, I don't know if you can see or not, there's an interval over there. It used to be an old farm field, and it's grown up in alder, and there's a bunch
Fly
of
across.
woodcock in that. I mean, I grabbed the canoe and scoot across the river and get my dog on two or three birds, quickly. So that I know very few are that fortunate, but
Are
luckily
you
here
hearing
we
grouse
got a good
drumming all spring from the porch
situation
there,
for
or
that.
not necessarily?
Yeah, at times. Yeah, at times. This year, I don't think I heard any this year, but there's always a family of grouse here on the backside of my camp. Here is a bit of a swamp and a lowland area, and there's grouse in that. We see them on the lawn here, regularly in the summertime type thing. Probably once a week you'll see a grouse on the lawn, and we had one here. It was funny. He whole spring he stayed on the roof of my dad's boat shed and drum, and he drummed there all spring. And I mean, you could run the mower and he'd stay there, and then he wouldn't do anything. He shut the mower off and he'd start drumming again. And I waited till things got quiet, but it was funny. But he was around for a few years doing that. But
Yeah.
anyway,
But,
but it's fun for sure.
that's just, yeah.
Yeah.
When we've been
Yeah.
going out and running in the woods the last couple of days, it's the, well, the pup, my pup, she's a tricolor, like my older dog, Hartley. So she really reminds like my wife and I of Hartley when he was a pup. But she's also like Rose is, she's zipping around doing her thing, and the pup can kind of keep up with Hartley a little bit because he's a little slower these days. So it's like he's got a little shadow out there in the woods. Sometimes I feel bad for him because he's like trying to do his own thing, and the pup's rooting around like wondering what he's doing. But it is so fun to watch the pup kind of pay attention to the other dogs and like run around on the trails. And I will say I've seen saw the same thing with Rose. Very early indication that Hazel will be like a natural backer because she sees the other dog stop and she's wanting to stop. And Hartley never did that, but again, Hartley did not have another dog along. And so I've always wondered, was that more so like is it just helpful to have those other dogs around and encourage that natural backing? I don't know, but I've already seen indication from Hazel that she'll be a pretty natural backer. I've started to like I have dreams of like seeing Hazel and Rose on point, stacked up on a sharp tail cover or rough grouse cover, that kind of thing. I'm getting excited just thinking about that,
Absolutely.
but.
No, they do big time learn from the older dogs. I mean, that's a big part of what I do here too, especially for range and dog quartering, that type of thing, and learning that. I think that's really, really, really helpful. And even with my cum training type thing, when they're young, I use a whistle a little bit. I only use it for, as a cum type whistle blast. I don't use it for direction change or anything. But like I said, having the other girls out and blow the whistle, say come, and they come, and the puppy comes too, and it just seems to really, really help out that side of the training, and they learn so much from the older dogs. I don't hunt here. I don't hunt two dogs together. I will run the puppy, if I got a puppy like yours, and it's 4 months old, whatever. I'm in a woodcock cover. This times I'll bring the young dog in, but I generally don't. But I will at times just kind of see what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's interesting because you hear like you might hear or read like your older dogs can't teach your younger dogs to hunt, and you hear different opinions on that. And I think there's nuance to it, right? There's you do want the dog to get plenty of solo hunting time to kind of learn to hunt independently. You don't want the pup always paying attention to the older dogs. But for all the other stuff that we're talking about, like just the general routine and the association, I do feel like it's super helpful to have a couple other dogs around, because she's paying attention to them, falling in line, so to speak, on our Absolutely. On our runs, and we can work on the hunting time and that sort of stuff. And I'll probably, relatively speaking, I don't hunt my dogs together very often because I'm usually trying to maximize my dog power. This fall I'll have three dogs, so I'll probably mix it up a little bit and we'll see how things go, but she'll get plenty of solo hunting time too. And you mentioned it earlier. She'll be my oldest pup that I've had of the three. Hartley was born in June. Rose was born in May. Hazel was born in April. So she's gonna be well on her way in a sense, relative to my other two dogs this fall. So we could get into some fun stuff this fall. So I'm very excited about that. Yeah.
That extra couple months at that age makes such a difference. I mean, the difference between, in October having a 6 month old dog or a 4 month old dog is huge. I mean, I remember a few years ago when I had my last, when I got Jordy, and, he was same age as with your dog, when he was born the second week of April type thing. So anyway, I remember having clients in my first group of the year, and I had him working really well, but I didn't kind of let on. I just said, so I had him with us. I said, boys, we've had a pretty good day. Do you mind if I let the puppy out for a little bit and, give a run? And it's like, oh no, let him go. And, I think he went 7 for 7 on woodcock. I mean, it was great. It was fun, but I did it just as a bit of a joke to the guys, so they were expecting a puppy to be running in and flushing birds everywhere type thing, and so it was it was fun, but he'd been a great little dog for me,
remember Rose's puppy season. She was very much a pup. Like, we brought her out to the prairie in September, and I mean, she was like just a couple little loops around the field. She wasn't doing anything. We saw there was a hen pheasant on the side of the road. We had her. She actually did point that, like, from like we I walked her into it, right? So get her on some birds, that kind of stuff. And then October went by. She got into some grouse in October, and we had some cool moments and got her first grouse and that sort of thing. But it wasn't until like November, December, and she was eventually like, 5, 6 months old. She really, really turned it on and did a lot more than I ever thought she would in that first season. So Hazel's a month and a half older than her, in a sense. Yep. So that'll be right during the peak of the season. So
Absolutely.
Low expectations, puppy season, but we're gonna have fun either way. I know that for sure.
It's so much fun to watch, and so many good days.
Yeah.
They're challenging. There's days that things don't go well, but the good days are so rewarding that
as we wrap up here, again, just in case, I know Keith and I talked about this a little bit, like from his perspective, but if anybody is seriously considering a trip up north of the border, like I am, I've had some people reach out and a couple of invites. I'd love to make it happen at some point. What What's the best way to do it? Like,
Precisely.
do you call an outfitter, call a guide? Like, how should people kind of get the process started if they really are interested in doing that?
Yeah, I guess it kind of comes down to price in one way. I mean, if you're looking for an all-inclusive type package with a lodge and your meals and all that and guide under the same umbrella, then the lodge is definitely the way to go. Or you can get hooked up with the right guide and rent a Airbnb. Got guys, lots of guys doing that as well. Come and stay and rental places for a few days. It's you can do either one. Finding the right guide is the key, I guess. I mean, when you find the right guy to go with, then everything else can be worked out pretty easily. But guides are scarce here in New Brunswick. I mean, there's not a whole lot of guys doing it professionally type thing. So there's a lot of demand and not so much supply. But it's easy. It is when it comes to the lodges, it's the easiest way to do it. That they're usually rigged up, and most guys come just to work the young dogs, really. I mean, there's so many people that I see come here, and their main reason for coming is just, to be able to get as many birds as they can under the young dog's nose type thing. And it's having the population of birds that we do, that's the big draw for here. I mean, I get so many emails and messages and stuff from people that they all start out the same way. My name is whatever, and I got an
My name is
eight-month-old,
Nick. I've got a 6-month-old puppy named
whatever.
Hazel.
And
Where should I
want
go,
to get
Jason?
some. That's exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'd be doing the very same thing. So it's good because, I mean, if you're in some parts of the U.S. or Canada, for that matter, the bird numbers are maybe not as strong as they are here, and you can come here and put a whole season's worth of birds under your dog's nose in a week. You know what I mean? And to see that transition, it is so fun to watch. To see the transition, even over 3 or 4 days, of someone bringing a young dog that hasn't had a lot of wild bird experience, and putting them on good numbers of birds. Every day for 3 or 4 consecutive days, five, you see that transition, and they really go from a pet to a hunting dog in a week. I mean, it's really, really, really fun to watch. And you get some nice emails back after a trip like that, and it's the rewarding part of it for sure. But that's the big draw here. We've got a pretty liberal woodcock limit. We can kill 8 birds a day. So, we have still at eight. It's been that way my whole life. So the limits are good, and grouse is six. So I mean, you can harvest 8 woodcock and 6 grouse a day. And if you're taking that home, you could take home double that, so you could take home double your daily. So your possession going home would be 16 woodcock and 12 grouse. So if you were traveling back home, that's what you could bring back for birds. I mean, you can shoot and eat birds while you're here as well. So I mean, you're not cut off if you shot 16 woodcock the first 2 days. I mean, if you get
Yeah,
talk nice to the
that's
camp
really
chef
good
and get them to hook you
opportunity.
up a bunch. Then, yeah, it is. So that's great, and to be able to do that, that's with a young dog, that
What
really
about
really makes
you don't have do you have to have a
makes such a
guide, or
huge
can you do
difference.
total
That's
DIY and like grab an Airbnb and just hunt public ground land?
Yeah, no, unfortunately, the New Brunswick regulations are any non-resident, even outside of in Canada here,
Okay, all
through
right.
different provinces, everyone outside of New
Well, that's
Brunswick
good
has
for
to
you,
have a
Jason.
guide. So yeah, so we Well, it is, but it's not. It's a. It is good for me, but it does put a lot of,
Sure.
puts a lot of demand because, there's so many people looking to come, and
Okay.
there's not enough guides for the most part to cover the people that are looking to come, and that's kind of the bad side of it is. But you get calls, and everyone's looking to come the same
Sure.
week or two weeks. So, it's a short window of prime time. You know what I mean? You're looking at those really the second and third week of October. I mean, that's your absolute prime time. The fourth week can be excellent, but we're skirting with snow at that time of the year, and we could have a system come through and dump a couple inches of snow. Even if it would only last a day or two, but it would be enough to put the fear into the woodcock to pick up and leave. So, but of course, the last couple of years then. It's stayed mild well into November, and the birds have stayed around, but it's hard to bank on that booking from this time of the year type thing into the fall, knowing what you might or might not see. And we've had some tremendous hunting in the last few days
Yeah.
of October, or sometimes it's been pretty empty. The grouse have been chased quite a bit, and they're not playing the game anymore either. So
So those that youth day
they
you're
can be
doing at
tough.
the pheasant
The
preserve,
later season grouse.
you're trying to steward the next generation of New Brunswick guys, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. That was a great day last year. We brought 45 kids from the local high school here, from the outdoor education program, up to the Pheasant Preserve, and it was a lot of fun. To see their enthusiasm, and lucky enough, I had a couple of woodcock. I had a male and a female woodcock, and I had a male and a female grouse there, so I could show them the differences and how to tell them apart. And then I had some birds planted in the field, and I could take the kids around and a majority out and let them. I was a little worried because, I mean, he's never hunted in front of a gallery of 45 people before, but he did great, and pointed all the birds, and it was fun. I mean, the kids were hooting and hollering when the bird was flushed, and it was we didn't bring any guns, but it was
Cool.
just a demonstration. But they were really, really, really enthused, and it was fun to watch and fun to be a part of too. It was good, and we
Cool.
were going to plan on doing it maybe again this year.
What's
We'll see.
last thing
And
before we bring this to a close? What's
oh,
a
no,
good day in the grouse woods, grouse and woodcock woods for flush counts? Like what's a real good day?
yeah, a real good day. Probably 70 would be my best day of the fall. 50, 60, 70 in that range. Grouse just depends on the year. I mean, but I've had 30, grouse days, grouse flushes, numerous times over the years. 15 or 20 is a really good day. 10 is kind of an average day. It depends on what we're doing as well. I mean, if we're going with a young dog and I'm hitting just primarily woodcock covers, then we're going to find the occasional grouse, but it's not going to be a big grouse day. But if we're hunting the hedgerows and the grouse covers where all the feed is, and it can be pretty good. It's not uncommon to run into two or three broods of grouse in one cover type thing. But it's I'm a little worried this year. I mean, it's been a very cold, wet May for us, and it's not been great. I don't expect to see, large broods this fall for grouse and woodcock. It's going to be hard to say, but it was cold and rainy all of May, so not great, not great.
Every year is different. That's
But
right. That's right,
anyway,
my
we'll
friend.
see.
Well,
Every year is different.
if folks do want to get in touch with you, Jason, if they got questions or want to reach out, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, I mean, you can always find me on Facebook. If you just Google Jason Curtis Miramichi Guide, I'll come up. My email address, uplandhunter3@gmail.com. But I mean, literally through Facebook or Instagram, or not on X really much anymore. But Facebook and Instagram, you can direct message me there or through email. And that's probably the
Perfect.
best way to
Well,
get a hold of
with
me
that, I
right
think
now, for sure.
the puppy has a play date scheduled. My wife has her friend and some kids over, and so we better wrap this up, buddy. It was great to have you back on the show. Thank you once again for joining us and sharing some of your decades of knowledge on grouse, woodcock, and bird dogs. We appreciate it, buddy, and wish you the best on your road to recovery and getting back in the woods this fall, my friend.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. Really, really, really enjoying your episodes. They're great fun to listen to. I enjoy them
All
all.
right. That does it for this episode of the Birdshot Podcast, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, everyone. It's your host, Nick, here with one more thing before you go. I want to thank you for joining us for this episode of the Birdshot Podcast presented by Onyx Hunt. Be sure to subscribe and follow the show so you don't miss our next episode. And if you really love the show and want to contribute above and beyond what you already do by listening, you can do so by joining our Patreon community. Click the link in the show notes of this episode to learn more. You can sign up for as little as $5 a month. And if you do, I'll send you some of these Birdshot Podcast can coolers and stickers as a thank you from me. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Birdshot Podcast.